All right, I guess I'm supposed to introduce you guys here. I'm Tom. I'm filling in for Mark on the Insane Asylum, and we're here with Tobias and Emily Wayland. Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. Thanks for having us.
Good. We're going to be talking about your book. I have a story about a Lake Michigan Mothman coming up, and I guess we're going to get into the singular. How do you pronounce that? Is that Fortean Society?
I've always said Fortean, and the reason is because, you know, it's based on the name of Charles Fort. And so I just thought, you know, if you turn that into an adjective or something, then you would say his name and then just add the suffix to it. So Fortean, I think.
Yep.
So what is a Fortean then?
Sure. So for anybody not familiar with the work of Charles Fort, he was an early 20th century collector of weird news stories. And so he would collect all of these weird news stories from all over the world, and he would compile them into these massive volumes. And he would write about them, sort of speculate what he thought was behind them, find commonalities. And he found quite a few commonalities. And so one of his most famous quotes is, "One measures a circle beginning anywhere." And that is to say that by examining one aspect of the paranormal, you can understand something about all of it, because there does seem to be connections between seemingly, otherwise disparate phenomena within this larger subject. So that's where the term Fortean comes from, is sort of anybody who wants to approach things from that same perspective. And so we don't specialize in any one area like cryptozoology or ufology or parapsychology or anything. We're just very interested in all of it. And so, you know, we study everything, and then we find connections when they exist. And actually, that's a lot of what the latest book that we put out, Strange Tales of the Impossible, deals with, is all of these different weird reports that we've investigated over the past few years, and all of the weird commonalities that you can sort of find between them.
So where's the line drawn? Do you draw it at, like, aliens or...
Line in terms of
paranormal, what do you consider in that circle?
Oh, I just put everything in there.
Everything. A two-headed dog. We're sitting there.
Sure. Sure. So, I mean, if you sort of look at the etymology or the root of the word paranormal, it literally means anything outside of normal. You know, people have sort of adopted that word to exclusively mean like ghosts and spirits and things, you know, similar to those subjects. But the fact is, I think a much more accurate way to use that word would just to be anything outside of normal, you know. So, yeah, I mean, two-headed dogs, Bigfoot, aliens, ghosts and hauntings, time slips, anything you want to do sort of in that realm outside of established normality, I think you could easily put in that sphere.
I once egged a house, and I threw the egg, and it bounced off the siding onto the concrete and didn't break.
Paranormal. Call it.
It's got to be. I threw it from 40 yards.
It counts. I mean, that's weird. That's outside of normal.
Time I was 19, and I remember saying, "I retire from egging houses. This is it."
Yeah, you got to go out on top. Absolutely.
Or it was a sign like, "You should really knock it off."
Yeah.
I'll take a hint from the universe.
Right.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about Mothman in Lake Michigan, because this one hits home with me, that a lot of people don't know this story with me, but I'd like to hear how that happened, because now I'm curious to read it.
Yeah, like we first heard about winged humanoid sightings in that area in the spring of 2017. And so at that time, I was writing news articles for the Singular Fortean Society. And it was brought to my attention that MUFON had released these three cases that had come through their case management system. And they all described these weird winged creatures that that people had reportedly seen in Chicago. And MUFON had published a short article about it. And so I picked up the story through them and, you know, wrote a little article for it for the Singular Fortean Society. And I thought our readers would get a kick out of it. And, you know, I really thought it was going to be just one of those weird things that that you just never heard about again. Right. You know, just this weird one off sighting. And then that was the end of it. But that's not what happened. You know, it was very soon after that we started seeing more reports coming through places like Phantoms and Monsters, UFO Clearinghouse. MUFON had more reports after that, and even other places. You know, we've had other people like the National Cryptid Society or the Pine Barrens Institute who have actually been able to like refer witnesses to us. So like these reports have come into a variety of different organizations at this point. But yeah, for us, it started in that spring when everything just sort of kicked off. And, you know, I was sort of very much outside of that investigation at that time, you know, because I was just covering it journalistically. And I reached out to Lon and Manuel separately. So Lon Strickler from Phantoms and Monsters, right, and then Manuel Navarette from UFO Clearinghouse. And I interviewed those guys separately. They were both very polite and forthcoming, you know, when I interviewed them. You know, I really just wanted to be able to reach out, sort of do my due diligence and see what they had to say about what people were seeing at that time. And so, you know, they didn't really have strong opinions at that time regarding sort of what was behind everything. And I respected that, you know, because it didn't seem like they were going into it with a whole lot of bias. Really, the main point they were trying to make, you know, very early in this investigation seemed to be that people are seeing something, and what that is, we have no idea. And so, you would have thought I would have turned my phone on silent considering how many times I've been interviewed, and yet it still manages to get me now and again. Sorry about that. And so you know, it wasn't too long after I had interviewed them and we published those interviews, you know, to the Singer the Fortean Society Society website, that you know, we started getting our own reports. And and next thing you know, like, we sort of find out we have some mutual friends who are traveling the same circles. Lon asked us if, given our proximity to the sightings and the fact that we're getting our own reports, if we wouldn't mind actually joining this investigation. And so we did. And we've been doing it ever since. It's not the only thing we do, but it's been a very prolific investigation so far.
Would you mind if I shared my personal story with you and then tell me how it stacks up?
Yeah, that's fantastic.
All right. I've always told everybody before I tell this story, if it wasn't for my friend Jen being with me, no one would have ever heard this story if I was alone. But since there were two people corroborating it, I do tell people now, otherwise I'd look like an idiot. But we got on a health kick and we were walking every night, me and my friend Jen. We lost a ton of weight. It was awesome. So looking for new ways to walk around Jackson, Wisconsin. Do you know where that is? Okay. So they were building a new subdivision and it's just fun to walk down like a gravel road. You know, it's very dark. We're walking down a gravel road. It tees to a major road at the end and there's new construction and it's about 10 o'clock at night, 2005, summertime, beautiful out. And I start hearing in the new construction, I hear a radio turn on and start going. And I'm like, that's weird. And I'm like, you know, I work construction. And if these guys are dumb enough to leave the radio on at night, I'm going to grab myself a new radio. So I start walking up and the music just gets like insanely loud, like deafening loud. And I can see something because there's a major highway way down the road and it tees. And I see something when a headlight comes, there's a shadow figure there. And I start to tell my friend Jen, like, I see something down there. And when I go to open the the new construction door, the hair on my arm stand up. The music is so loud. It's Tom Petty, Free Fallin'. And my friend Jen, like, pulls at me to run. And I'm like, hold on, wait for a car to come. I need to see what this thing is, where we're going. And there's no streetlights, no anything. And I see it again, and it's just a winged creature way down at the bottom of the road. And it takes off and starts flying. And we take off running towards, you know, where we parked in this subdivision. And I'm thinking, Jen is a lot faster than I expected her to be. I thought I was a forward in soccer at the time. I thought I was going to blow by her, but I didn't. And she puts her hand on me and says, stop. And we stop, and this thing circles around. We can see it through the moonlight and the stars. It was a clear night. It's got red eyes, wings that aren't flapping, and it flies across the road in front of us and lands in a tree. And it was really weird because it landed in a tree, and I go hunting a lot. So I'll see turkeys in the morning, and they're only like 30 pounds, but they break branches and they're noisy. This thing silently, delicately landed in the tree. And that is the only way back to the car. And we're as far to the side of the road, up to the woods on the other side as we can get. And as we're walking, I see one red eye, like it's looking forward. And I'm kind of running. And then you can see both red eyes because I saw it tilt its head and look right at me. And I got like nauseated and we took off running. And that's the last we saw of it.
Wow. Did you get a sense of how big this thing was?
Yeah, I believe it would be about 8 feet tall.
That is enormous. Wow. Interesting. Now, that ring. Did you hear the radio, or did you just hear it?
I just heard it. Never saw a radio, nothing. We never went in the house. The door was locked. They put those old doors on there. But as soon as I touched the handle, that's when like electricity went through me, and it was just so loud. Like it wasn't like it was coming in the house anymore. It was like it was just like you're in a department store radio, you know. It was just part of the world. It's weird.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, like we've got a couple of cases that have reported like some weird
radio interference.
Yeah, well, yeah, I was going to just kind of like weird EMF kind of stuff, you know, like electrical interference and things like that. Like Emily said, radio interference has been one where these two young women, this was just in Oregon, Wisconsin, actually, were out driving, would have been last Thanksgiving. So Thanksgiving 2020, and they're out cruising around outside of Oregon because there's nothing to do in Oregon, yeah. If you're 18.
I lived, you know, there for about 5 years. There was never anything to do, not even back in the 80s.
Right. And so like they're out cruising around and they notice in this one spot, like their radio keeps like freaking out, basically. So it would get all staticky, and then it would start playing a different station, like all the way at the other end of the dial. And in that spot is where they had their weird sighting. You know, as they drove through it, they saw this huge winged humanoid creature, as they said, like swoop down in front of them over the road. And then as they kept, you know, driving around, because again, that's just what they were doing. Eventually, like they went back to that same spot to see if they could see it again after they kind of calmed down, you know. And one of the young women actually said that she saw this thing standing out in a field. But it just reminds me of your experience because of the strangeness of the radio. Like, I mean, why would it do that? Right. An interesting follow-up to that actually is, so Emily and I went out there, of course, cause that's what we do. And, you know, I had interviewed both of these women on the phone first, and then, you know, it was in the middle of COVID. So, you know, I was like, well, if you're comfortable going out there with us, that's fine. We can wear masks and everything, but they really weren't. And I completely understood, of course. And so I was like, look, like, that's great. You told us where it was. We'll just go out there and we'll see what there is to see. And so, you know, we drove their route and went through this intersection and everything. And I didn't notice anything unusual right away, but we got home and we were reviewing all of our recording equipment. And we noticed that there was this weird, like, hissing and like popping and like crackling sound over all of our audio. This is across like multiple devices. It wasn't anything in the car causing it. And so it was just something causing this weird audio interference in all of our cameras, which we still can't explain it. And the weird thing is, of course, once this happened once, we were like, well, hell, we have to go back. Of course we do. And so it was what, maybe a couple of weeks later.
Yeah.
We went back, did the exact same thing, drove the exact same route, had all of the same devices, which of course we had used previously and since. And they work fine and they don't record anything weird. And in that one spot, we had the same interference, but this time it was much quieter. And what's really interesting about that interference too, is there's this invisible boundary basically surrounding this intersection seemingly, where we, like, everything's fine, no audio interference whatsoever. We cross this invisible boundary and all of a sudden it just starts up. We go through this like intersection and at some point, like, we must cross out of it because it stops. And then we turn around and go back through this, like, this spot again, cross that invisible barrier, bam, audio interference. And so it was just so strange. And that second time, you know, like, we're looking for anything that we can find.
Where might be areas? Do you remember the road, the intersections?
Oh boy, you know what? I don't remember it off the top of my head, but you know, I could find it pretty easily and you know, send it to you if you're interested in checking it out.
Well, I grew up out there, you know.
Okay.
I know a little bit about history about Oregon, and it's kind of got some strange things that could cause some of the interference you're talking about.
Oh, interesting. You know, okay.
For one, most of Oregon was built on a swamp.
Okay.
We had to have sump pumps in all of our basements. The power would go out, the streets would flood. You know, the whole town would flood. You know,
sure.
Downpour. You go out, you had to be real careful mowing your back lawns, you know, your backyards and stuff like this, because they had, it was like, you could see the cement. It was like a cement slab that kind of raised the lawn a little bit or kept it from sinking too far.
Hmm.
And then if you think about it, the other thing, you go out too far on 138, which is between Oregon and Stoughton, the highway between Oregon and Stoughton. You'll get too close to the speedway, you're going to find a lot of radio interference.
Oh, for sure. Okay. This was the intersection of Sand Hill Road and Rutland Dunn Town Line Road. So I just looked it up.
Right.
Real quick.
So what's your theory on that?
You think that was part of the marshy area.
Okay. It didn't seem like there wasn't really much out there, you know. It was relatively, I wouldn't describe it as necessarily isolated. Like, it was fairly isolated in that it's a rural area. There aren't a ton of houses, you know, out there. Yeah, and there weren't any, like, there wasn't a major highway or anything right next to it. We were a ways off the highway. So I don't know. You know, when we were out there again, I was looking for anything that might have caused this interference, you know. So we're looking for, like, ham radio towers and huge satellite dishes and, you know.
Can we drive up that road several times up and down?
Oh, so many times, yeah. Or, like, you know, just even, like, huge electrical transformers, like anything at all that's going to be putting off the kind of, like, EMF. There really wasn't. We couldn't find anything.
Road that's mostly one small road that's a lot of manufacturing type foundry type buildings, and then probably the biggest alarm out in Oregon would be up at Hope Hill, you know, the prison up there.
Sure. So yeah, I mean, I don't have a good hypothesis as to what caused it, because we couldn't find any explanation. It's just unexplained, basically, at this point.
Say that way.
the one thing that was interesting that I would say that I do like to point out to people though, is the fact that the second time that we went back, it was much quieter. And that I found very interesting, which is why we're actually going back there again this month at the 1 year anniversary, because I want to see if it's still there or if it's gone, you know, because.
Or if it's even weaker, do you think?
Yeah, or something.
Think it could be like residual energy?
Maybe, you know, like the first thing that occurred to me when it was like when we went out there and noticed how quiet it was, you know, hey, is this something that's fading? You know what I mean? Like was whatever this phenomenon was that these two young women interacted with, you know, was it present in a stronger form when they interacted with it? And it's been fading ever since. And so that's kind of what I want to see when we go out there again is, you know, is that audio interference there at all? Is it much weaker? Will it be really strong again? Maybe it's cyclical with the time of year or something. Who knows? I mean, that's why we have to keep going back and just sort of try to track these trends.
Is there any way to track the decay rate over the three times you go and put that with decay rate of anything on the periodic table?
I mean, maybe for this specifically, you know, it's got to be some kind of radiation, I would think, to be interacting, you know, with the electronic devices that we have, you know, like if it's interfering with our audio, I mean, it's got to be somewhere on that EM spectrum, right? And so,
I was thinking the same thing, but the only thing that got me away from the radiation was those decay rates are like 5,000 years. You know, it wouldn't be. That's why you almost got to go to.
Well, if it was, because there are things that will that can create. You know, that like the waves you find on that spectrum, right? And so if something was creating this radiation sort of as a byproduct of something else. So if and this is all speculative, everybody. So like don't quote me on this and use it against me later. You know, we're just following ideas, right?
Oh, it is.
So if you were, you know, looking at say something like a portal or something, like say there's a portal, a parallel universe, and the byproduct of this portal was you know, radiating this type of energy that was interfering with our audio stuff and was making these young women's radio go haywire, then that portal closes, right? And it's not pumping out this radiation anymore, or it's not radiating this energy. Then you would expect that to maybe fade over time, you know, kind of just be dispersed into the environment to where people don't even notice it, and then it just fades away entirely.
Right.
And so we will definitely see. You know, like I'm interested to know what's going to happen if it's there at all.
Like using your example as a portal. You know, that interference could only be detected, like you said, maybe when it's open.
You know, yeah.
It shuts off. It's like a switch, you know, you turn it on, the light comes on. Turn it off, the light goes off. You know, but there could be some like residual, like maybe magnetic or electrical leftover to interfere slightly, but then you get strong interference when that thing's open. It wouldn't really be a decay rate. It'd be like maybe leftover energy or something.
Right. That's exactly what I think, another theory.
How many times do you want to drive through that intersection, though, before your hair falls out?
Yeah, right. I'm just slowly giving myself cancer every time I go through this intersection.
Yeah.
I love my car would fail for good. Yeah. Boom.
Oh, well, totally.
Cars nowadays, everything's all computerized. You know, it's just it. You know, you don't want to mess with driving through those things, and then all of a sudden, I've got a $5,000 car bill.
Chip shortage right now too. You can't just like replace that stuff. If you fry a microchip in your car or something, it's good luck. Get you'll get on the waiting list. So
shit. I had to wait 6 weeks just for the video card that got put in this custom built computer that I had custom built for me.
I believe it.
And that was like right 6 months ago. And it was like a 6 week wait just on the video card alone.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely nuts. So, but I mean, we'll, you know, as far as actually investigating that area, we're not too far from there. So, you know, I'll keep going back like over and over again.
Madison's a stone throw from where I got.
Yeah. Well, we actually, like, we moved out of Madison now. We're in Orfordville. The village of Orfordville, it's all of 1,400 people, so it's okay if nobody's heard of it.
So we got a 40, church and two bars.
Yeah, we don't even have a stoplight. I'm really proud of that. There's no stoplights here. But you know, we're about 40 minutes south of Madison, like 20 minutes north of the Illinois border. So I mean, you know, we're closer to everything that we were working on anyway. Yeah, I mean, Oregon's not, it's still not far away from us.
I got the hell out of Madison about 6 years ago.
Yeah, it was the right time. You know, we were never going to be able to buy a house there anyway. And so, you know, that's what people do.
Yeah. It's just been getting worse. I didn't feel safe there anymore.
No, I don't blame you. We lived, on just off Willie Street and, you know, I mean, I was usually okay. It wasn't really very safe for Emily to be out by herself, which, you know, that sucks.
Who wants to live in that place?
Last place I lived was about two blocks from Sanatorium Hill.
Okay, sure. Yeah, that's
yeah, it was pretty
rough. Yeah, the neighborhoods back there have been kind of. You know, they've had some issues for sure.
Well, they've been destroying that city too. I mean, they took one of the greatest events from that side of town and moved it. You know, I mean, it was a tradition to have, what was it called now? I used to know.
Rhythm and Booms.
Yeah, Rhythm and Booms. Thank you, Emily. Rhythm and Booms. You know, they destroyed it. It was like a Madison tradition.
Right.
You know. I had a friend once from Iowa. She came up right around the time that Rhythm and Booms was going on, that one of the last years it was going on. And she's like, I have never, ever seen anything like this before. You know, but because people complain, they had to move it and destroy it and take all of it.
Yeah, I mean, they moved it downtown and it's not. I don't know. Like we went there a couple times, I think.
It was right there.
Yeah, I mean it was okay. But no, it wasn't it wasn't Rhythm and Booms for sure.
Yeah. That's the way it was. I used to work for when they first started the Rhythm and Booms deal. I worked setting it up for a while. And then I worked security there.
That's awesome. Yeah, yeah. I mean I grew up going to it. We used to go every single year. And then the last Shake the Lake. I mean, we didn't even go downtown. We just watched it from like the park by our house, which was good because there was a shooting. So we didn't have to be there for the shooting. So
yeah, that's the reason I got out of there, man. So, I don't think I'm ever near that. So you ever been to Lee's Farm?
No, it's one of those things where our friend Jay. Keeps telling us, Hill. You know, get out there. I know you have told us.
Finding Jay, right?
What's
You're
that?
Talking about Jay Hill from Finding Jay, right? That Jay?
Oh, Jay or Jay Buchanan from Finding Jay.
That's it. Get him confused.
But yeah, I know he's been telling us to get out there. I know you and Mark have been telling us to get out there. And I think finally, probably. Next year would be, you know, the mm-hmm. likely time. Well, because, you know, I was talking to Donna about it at the Beast of Bray Road conference, you know, and she said, hey, you know, like just get a hold of him, basically. And I'm sure you can figure something out. So mm-hmm. I'd like to get something set up probably for spring of 2022 to actually be able to get out there, stay overnight, you know, bring cameras and all of our other weird
camper.
What's that?
Make sure you get a tent or an RV.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. Like we'd probably just bring a tent, you know, something like that. But yeah, we have plenty of camping equipment and all that stuff.
And good luck staying overnight there.
No.
We tried that. It didn't work.
No, well,
in what way?
Yeah, what
happened? We were there about 2 weekends before the Lisa Bray Road Conference. We had that scheduled ahead of time. It was myself, Mark, and Dale Kaczmarek from Illinois. Mm-hmm. And we went there. Oh, it was about 7 o'clock at night we started. We got the lease place. We took a tour, kind of got a preview of the hayride that he gave to everybody while during that conference. And then we set up our equipment, and everything was going good. You know, we had some hits on some of our equipment. And at one point, we were tracking a bipedal figure on the thermal, and it was in a cornfield. So you couldn't see it, but you could see it on the thermal because it was in the cornfield.
Okay.
Dale and I lost it. We believed that it was following Mark because Mark was walking out in the hayfield part of it, and he swore something was following it. When he came back, he told us he swore something was following him in the hayfield or the cornfield. And shortly, about 2 or 3 hours after that, you know, we've got all our cameras set up on tripods out there and everything's going just great. I've lived here in Wisconsin all my life. I have never, ever seen fog roll in so fast and so thick. We had to quickly pack up all of our equipment because of this fog and the moisture that it was creating on the equipment. You know, worst thing that could happen to equipment.
Sure.
And by the time we got done packing it up and putting it in the cars, about 5-10 minutes later, the fog was gone. It was like it was chasing us out of there. It was like trying to tell us to get the fuck out.
Interesting. Huh. Why?
Well, we got all of this on like four different devices of audio and stuff. Of you hearing, you know, Mark out there by himself saying, I swear something's following me in the cornfield. And then you hear Dale and I talking up on another audio device saying, we think it left and followed Mark because we lost track of it.
Right.
You know, and we can't be sure what it is because where Lee's farm is situated down there, you know, it could be what they call the Beast of Bray Road. It could have been a Bigfoot for all we know because, you know, as far as Jay goes, it's been in that southern part of the Kettle Moraine Forest.
We've been out there with Jay tons of times,
right? And that's just a short little jaunt down there.
Yeah,
to go down to Lee's farm from the edge of the Kettle Moraine Forest there.
Absolutely.
And you look at his property and seen the things we've seen and heard the stories we heard from him, anything's possible. I mean, that place is loaded with a food source. The deer come down there in droves just to eat on the berries that are just growing wild through there because you can see the deer track clearly all over.
Oh, sure.
You know, and there's your Bigfoot or Beast of Bray Road food source right there, you know. And I don't know what it is, but he told us a story once about he used to lay it, can't do it no more. DNR shut him down on this one. But he used to pick up the roadkill and put it out on his property. Well, he did that one time. Pretty good-sized deer. Probably close to about 200 pounds. And it ended up wedged between two trees when he found it. Okay. How it got wedged there, I don't know. A wolf or something dragging it? There was no way that could have happened.
Uh-huh. A mountain lion.
Up and kind of, nope. We anything that would have had to use its jaws, whatever it had to have arms, lift that sucker up and drop it into, or actually physically, because the way it was like it was dropped from, you know, how trees grow, they get a little wider as they go upward sometimes.
Oh, right.
you know, it was like it was dropped in the wide part. Just, you know.
Was it, I mean, so was it like, was it up high in this tree, or was it just like between two trees
on the high where it was wedged? Okay. It was about waist high on me, and I'm about 6 foot tall.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I think I was a little confused about its exact placement. But yeah, no, you're right. That's super weird. Because, of course, talking about finding a deer in a tree or something, and most people, I think, would in this area would think, hey, a mountain lion, because they'll drag prey up into a tree to save it.
The evidence of it being dragged and wedged, like, through the side wasn't there.
Yeah.
It had to be lifted above where it was and dropped it.
Yeah, that's weird. I don't know. I don't know how to explain that.
You know, it's unexplained. We can't explain it. And, you know, living here in Wisconsin, we know I know most of all the, you know, local wildlife. And I don't believe any of it could have done what we saw. You know.
No, I mean, yeah, that sounds an awful lot like deliberate placement for some reason. It doesn't even really make sense from a biological standpoint, because there's no advantage to putting a deer there. So if you're a wild animal or something, because, you know, again, like the whole point of a mountain lion dragging its prey way up into a tree is so nothing else is going to get at it, you know, and keeping it that low to the ground, that's not going to like keep anybody away from it. So yeah, no, that just doesn't make sense. It seems like somebody had to put it there on purpose. For what, I mean, maybe it was like the fog, maybe, you know, maybe it's just like supposed to freak you out. Who knows? Just like a, hey, I'm here and I want you to know that I'm here.
Right. Right. I mean, it was like, it was taken from like the center of the hayfield over to the tree line and then wedged.
Right.
You know, I always think like the Bigfoot are checking us out when they do something like that. Like, they're watching us because they know we're going to stop there and try to figure it out, and then they can kind of gauge what we're doing.
I could see that. You know, just, I mean, we've definitely like had that. Up. Yeah, oh, definitely. I mean, we've had that experience of being watched. Yeah, totally. Like, mm-hmm. when we're out in the Kettle Moraine State Forest, you know. So, yeah, it definitely feels like there is an element of like observation involved with your interaction with whatever these things are, right? So,
and Jay, whenever we go up to them, he always has like a routine, of like putting his arms up, being like, guys, it's just me, you know, I'm not armed or anything.
Not I think threatening, you're
yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I don't believe a lot of those people when they say they've had those kind of sightings and they were attacked, you know. Because I don't believe Bigfoot's aggressive unless you do something to it first. You know?
Yeah, I mean, like the only credible sightings that I've really heard of that involve like anything even close to like in attack would be, you know, sometimes you'll get people talking about Steve Kruger, right? So like when that bear wolf thing that he described grab that deer out of the back of his truck. Like that's about the closest I think we get in credible sightings, at least, you know, in this area to some kind of attack. You know? But yeah, I mean, like people, I don't know. I've never heard of anybody in Wisconsin being like attacked by a Bigfoot.
Maybe they don't leave survivors.
I can see throwing the rocks or throwing the branches. It's like, your way of saying, hey, you're getting too close. Get the hell out of here.
Feels nervous, though, you know?
Right. Well, and to Tom's point, you know, if there's a 100% kill rate or something where people just vanish, you know, I mean, that's a fairly popular explanation.
That's for the missing 411, right?
Yeah. So you get into like, what's his name? David Pilates and like the missing 411 and all the national parks disappearances and stuff. And I mean, like it's a popular explanation for it. I mean, the one thing that we're missing is proof, you know, obviously. So, I mean, you could just as easily say that those people were, I don't know, abducted by aliens and taken to Venus. I mean, we just have no idea, right? If they're missing. You know, and then when people are found, it is often in weird circumstances. So, you know, you find their clothes have been taken off and they're some distance away, or you find the body in an area that, you know, you wouldn't think would be accessible to somebody. Like, they really had to work hard to get there. And that stuff's all really, really weird. You know, I'm not going to say that it isn't. You know, I just, based on the other reports we have, like, for instance, if let's say that we're assuming Bigfoot is an animal, right? Now, an animal that's aggressive is going to be aggressive, well, often a lot of the time. So if these things are out there killing people, there should be these instances of, like, really aggressive behavior or, you know, close calls. Like, you should have some people who were just injured or almost injured or something, who just barely got away. And maybe there are some that I just don't know about, honestly, because I don't know everything, right? But yeah, I haven't seen it around here, you know, not at all.
I like to think Bigfoot is just too good of a killing machine to let anyone get away.
It'd make for a good movie. I would watch that movie. So, sure. You know, it probably already exists. I'm going to just Google Bigfoot horror movies after this.
You need the man who killed Hitler and then Bigfoot. That's the movie.
I've heard that's good.
There are a few guys out there.
Sam Elliott, it's great.
They killed Bigfoot or shot him. But then somewhere along the line, the body or the carcass disappeared.
Yeah, oh, of course. You know, actually, that reminds me, a friend of ours, Aubrey, he's in a paranormal investigator down in Georgia, and he interviewed a witness, and I got to listen to the actual, like, recorded interview of this. He talked to this woman down there who said that she was on this camping trip near, oh boy, what was it? Kind of really ominous name.
Blood Mountain.
He was like, yeah, it was like literally like Blood Mountain, which is an actual mountain, like it's on the Appalachian Trail there. And so, you know, they're camping near Blood Mountain. And she said that she and her friends saw this thing, this, you know, hairy humanoid, this huge humanoid thing. And they were out in Appalachia, so, like, they were armed, which makes sense. I probably would be too. And they said they started shooting at it, which that part didn't really make a lot of sense to me because it wasn't really doing anything. But they said that they started shooting at it, and they said that they found some blood and stuff, but whatever it was must have got away. So, yeah, I mean, people definitely say, you know, that they've shot Bigfoot, hit Bigfoot.
Know how cool that would be to have a Bigfoot head on your wall? That is like a conversation starter.
Right. Well, it's a little morbid, though. I mean, you know, part of it would just be like,
My big buck. I got Bigfoot.
I guess it feels like if you just had like grandpa stuffed and put on the couch, though, you know, like, because they could be intelligent, you know, like they seem in a lot of ways to be sapient. And so, I'm not an advocate for people trying to hurt Bigfoot. Like, it just...
No, Oklahoma's got a $3 million bounty on him.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing, you know? Like, people... Well, the other argument, of course, there is that, like, you know, people say, well, we have to kill one to get scientific proof. And then if we have scientific proof, then, you know, we can protect them. And my argument for that is, well, look, do they need to be protected? Because we don't have a body right now. So they seem to be doing okay. If they needed to be protected from us, like, the bodies would be piling up, you know, but they're not. So I think Bigfoot's fine.
I'll translate that argument. We need a body so people stop calling us nerds.
I think that's pretty much it. Yeah. Yeah. They just care way too much what mainstream science thinks about their hobby. It's like, no, it's just fine. Like, enjoy hunting Bigfoot. You don't have to prove anything to anybody.
Yeah. I went through that when I went to medical school. I would ask some professors about ghosts and they would all tell me, don't ever say this, but yes. And then they all have their ghost stories, but since science is so against it, if they'd ever found out that they're getting, like, these people who believe in ghosts are getting grants to do research, it would like ruin their career just by going on record saying they believe in ghosts. It's insane.
Oh, it is. Like it's a huge shame. Like there are still some accredited people, you know, out there doing like parapsychological research. I don't know if you guys saw the Bigelow Institute for Consciousness Studies, like just gave out their awards for they had this contest basically where they were like, hey, if you're a professional in this field, you know, we want to see the best evidence that people have for like any kind of afterlife.
Is that the guy who owns Skinwalker Ranch?
He did. I think he sold it, but yeah, like Robert Bigelow. Robert Bigelow, yeah, the billionaire who's super interested in UFOs. Yeah, well,
not
he's also
Bam Bam Bigelow, the wrestler who does the
not Bam Bam Bigelow. Yeah, that would be awesome though. Like we need more professional wrestlers in the paranormal. I think like here's a couple. But we could use more.
We'll get Papa Shango. We'll call The Undertaker. We'll get Paul Bearer out of the grave.
The Undertaker. Yeah, I mean, like that's very thematic. That just makes sense. But anyway, like they had this contest, and yeah, it was a bunch of like accredited, you know, scientists, like doctors and PhDs and stuff, who won all the top prizes. And so like, and they're attached to major like universities and stuff. And so, you know, it was pretty, I thought it was really cool. You know, it was very heartening to me to see like, you know, that there is parapsychology being performed by scientists still. You know, I think a lot of people just assume that died off in the early 20th century or mid-century at the latest, but no, yeah. People are still out there doing it.
Ask Joe about their award-winning podcast. Even mainstream media, what'd you get it for?
Best non-fiction. They categorized us as sci-fi.
Yeah.
As a sci-fi podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they didn't have a category that actually fit. Well, so
they could have. No, they made that category and put us in it.
Yeah, that's the category they put them in.
One
it's like a double.
Playing or
kicks to the balls with both feet.
I mean, that almost feels like, you know, when you were a kid and like, you know, like your grandma's trying to figure out what you're into. Like she's really trying hard to understand your hobbies, but she can never quite get there. And so, yeah. You know, like you're super into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And so, you know, like she gets you like a stuffed turtle or something. And you're like, oh, grandma, you were so close. So yeah. That's kind of like mainstream society trying to understand right. What this podcast is about. Yeah. You're like, is it sci-fi? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, my grandma would give me a Go Sports shirt.
Go Sports. My favorite team is sports. So like that works out great. Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah, that's where do they put your book in the library section?
Great question.
Libraries have it. Some might.
Oh, some of them do for sure.
Because we've seen some ordered.
I'm going to guess that it's probably firmly in the speculative nonfiction section. Because that's where back when I used to go to the library all the time to get my books, like pre-internet. Now I just can order all my books. But, most of what I was looking for would be in like speculative nonfiction or something similar. I think they like sometimes they would have like a dedicated occult section, which was cool.
Sometimes there literally is an unexplained section.
Sure. Yeah, so probably something like that.
I saw like an unexplained category or section at a library. I think it was in Racine. I saw Chad Lewis there do a talk.
Nice.
I'm looking at your books on Amazon, but they don't really. It also says books I may like UFO, Jesus, and Psychic Witch.
You might like those books. I don't know. The guy who wrote Psychic Witch seems super nice. I don't really know him, but I've seen him on Twitter.
Oh, really? Cool.
So, yeah, I don't know. Like, because the weird thing about Amazon is like they don't use like, you know, the same library categorization system. So I think like the books are probably filed under like unexplained and slash UFOs unexplained or something.
Mysteries. Category for whatever reason.
Yeah. So it's something like that.
Okay. Strange Tales is unexplained mysteries. And the Michigan Monster is labeled in occult UFOs, UFOs, and UFOs.
Okay, well, there you
that
have it.
That's not what I registered it under, but I feel like it gets put in lists.
They do their own categorization, I'm sure.
Yep, based on it's UFOs.
I think some of it's got to do with because they do audiobooks as well. You know.
I could see that.
You know.
Well, I mean, in a way, the Lake Michigan Mothman, like, it's unidentified and it's often flying. So, yeah, sure.
It is a UFO, technically. Right.
You know, yeah, I guess
technical about it. It is a UFO, unidentified flying object.
That's what I saw.
That, I
did anyone else notice not the wings flapping? It was like a kid was holding it and going like flying an action figure.
Yeah, I mean, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just I've heard that from cases we've had too.
Yeah, I mean, definitely a lot of people. Sometimes people will report it taking off and it not flapping its wings, but sometimes people will report it flapping its wings while taking off. In flight, it's almost unheard of for anybody to report this thing flapping its wings at all.
No, okay.
So like once it's in the air, like it doesn't seem to
flap.
Yeah, it's just kind of has them out and then it's you know gliding or flying around. So yeah, and which is weird. Now, and I think that speaks to like a really interesting aspect to this phenomenon too, which is sort of the seeming biological impossibility of this thing to even exist as it does. You know, so if you think about like a 7 or 8 foot tall, I mean even like something my size, I'm 6'2", and if I were to need like if I were to get off the ground, I would need like 30 foot wings. You know what I mean? Like they would have to be huge. Yeah. And people report this creature bigger than me somehow flying with, you know, 15 foot wings. Like it
that's
just
nothing.
No, yeah. They shouldn't be able to fly. It doesn't make all sense. Right. And yet here we are.
Here, I got another argument for you on that one though.
Sure.
You got to take in most of these pictures that I've seen of like Mothman, they're not like beefy like you or me. They're like skin and bones, so they're not going to weigh. Probably,
let's say pluck a bird though. They look like nothing. Well, they're hollow bones and
yeah. So
sure, you know, I mean maybe
the weight's going to be a lot different.
Yeah. I don't know. And then another thing that stuck out was the eyes were like a color. The closest thing that I've ever seen was the reflectors on a bike. When they get that like shiny ruby red.
Yeah.
Yeah. When the light that's hits the eye just color. Right.
So yeah. Was it like eye shine?
They weren't shining out. It was just looking into redness of that. It's weird.
Well, like, you know, cause like you've probably had the experience of, you know, literally seeing like a deer in your headlights or something at some point.
And was I know it, that as a hunt. No. Deer, like, even I've shined enough deer to know that, you know, the does have the green eyes, the bucks have the orange eyes. So get excited when you see the orange eyes and what that's like. These were like almost like lit like a jack-o'-lantern when you look at it that way, if that makes sense.
They're illuminating, not reflecting.
Yeah. So it's like creating its own light, which is also weird because if your eyes created light, you should just be blind. You know, because that's not how
I dark, right?
Bizarre. Yeah. So, and I'm not saying that to say that like these things couldn't exist. I'm saying that these things seem to exist because people keep seeing them, but for some bizarre reason, they're seemingly impossible. So people are awesome creatures. You know, which what does that mean? You know, like are we dealing with something that? Basically sort of works on principles outside of what we think is possible.
And even the Terminator knew to put sunglasses on to cover his red eye.
Right. now I'm picturing Mothman in sunglasses and that, you know, I'm going to need that on a t-shirt or something.
Cover his red eyes.
Right.
Well, so what'd you figure out with Lake Michigan Mothman? Is it one? Is it what I see?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, like I could lie to you and tell you that I know what it is, but I don't, and frankly, nobody does.
I personally think it's more than one.
I would agree. I think it's
that much. I believe, just because like it doesn't feel like Santa Claus, you know, like this one guy going around everywhere. It feels like there's different ones of it, and
right.
With some of those sightings too close to each other, too far apart, distance. You know.
Well, you got me thinking on something.
Mm-hmm.
You really got me thinking something of, do you think this could be some sort of alien spacesuit with the inside of a helmet looking red, maybe? Jetpacking around?
Maybe. It's an interesting idea. Now, certainly a lot of these sightings take place in you know, the same geographic area as UFO sightings. Although, you know, that presupposes that we know what UFOs are. For instance, we really don't. Maybe they're extraterrestrial craft. Maybe they're something else entirely, which they very well could be. You know, what's interesting about these sightings? I mean, like Joe said, like they are spread out over this huge geographic area, like all around Lake Michigan. It's not just Chicago. People like to focus on Chicago, but it's not just Chicago. And you know, beyond that, you know, like Emily said, I do think that. We're dealing with multiple creatures. There are some differences in the description, like nothing so much that would make me think that it's something else entirely, but enough where it seems individual. You know what I mean? So like people are seeing different like individuals of whatever this is. And then when you start to think about some of the difficulties in reconciling how this thing should work, if it's a true biological being, you know, personally at this point, I kind of land more on the more high strangeness side of it. I don't know that what we're dealing with is something that we would conceive of as a traditional biological animal so much as some other kind of entity. You know, and you could describe that in a variety of terms. You know, you could describe it as a spiritual entity or interdimensional or whatever you want. But all I know at this point is, you know, based on the accounts we have right now, it certainly seems to be something outside of our current understanding of biology and physics. So, yeah. I mean, I take that for what it is, you know.
I personally think it's like you said, an interdimensional species, maybe something spiritual in the, like a spiritual realm, or.
Those extra. Might be the same thing. Like you
yeah,
might literally
that's
be describing
the thing. And then,
explain how they could be in one place. And then a couple hours later show up 300-400 miles or 3,000-4,000 miles away, you know, within a couple hours. I mean, the whole Mothman sighting, I mean, wasn't the earliest sighting, Point Pleasant, West Virginia.
So those were earlier. That was like that particular flap. So if you're sort of talking about the Point Pleasant sightings as investigated by like, you know, John Keel and Gray Barker and you know all of them, Mary Heyer, that was 66 to 67. There have been cases that have been reported since then, where the witnesses said that they took place before that flap. But I think that flap was probably the earliest sort of reported sightings as close to the time as when they actually happened. You know what I mean? So like when people saw it in 66, they were reporting it like that same day or at least you know, relatively recently in comparison to when they saw it. And a lot of the stuff that reportedly took place before that it has only been reported relatively recently. So, you know, who knows, you know, if it took place when the witness said it did. So, yeah, no, to take a really long time answering that. Yeah, I mean, like some of the earliest reported sightings definitely are Point Pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets shown up in Chicago, which is, you know, look at that, thousands of miles away. You know.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I mean, after the.
And if it is, maybe it is interdimensional and can travel, you know, that fast, that far of a distance, that fast, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we had witnessed before. Right. Well, I mean, I think you have to keep an open mind for sure. I mean, we had witnesses report, this thing just disappearing, basically, like while they're looking at it. One guy told us that as he was staring at this thing, it just sort of blurred and then it was gone. And then, it just disappeared.
That sounds like a computer glitch in real life.
Yeah. Well, we're living in a simulation, right?
Yeah.
It's another thing. Yeah.
Matrix come to life.
Yeah, right.
That goes the Cartesian model all the way back.
Those are, you know, I haven't seen Mothman, but I have seen some pretty strange shit around the Madison area in the last 6 years. Since Mark and I started doing this back in, I don't know, when did we change formats? 2019, we started doing all the investigating and stuff. But it also triggers some memories, too, as I'm sitting there getting into this. I used to travel back and forth to Madison a lot when I was a kid. And if you go down what we called as Old 14, which basically you just keep following Park Street out to you know, South Park Street, and you just keep following it to Oregon. That's Old 14.
That's how you get to our house, actually.
That's New 14. Well, either way, I can't remember. Anyway, you follow this area out, you get to the one exit for Oregon. Yeah, so that's New 14. That you follow Park Street straight out. So you get to the exit that actually goes on to Old 14, which ends up turning into Main Street, Oregon, basically. Right before that exit, there's like the Oregon, big Oregon wooden, I don't know if it's still there, but it says Oregon on it, and it's a big wooden type sign. It's, you know, off in a field, off the highway, off the side of the road quite a bit. There's a couple other like big bog type deals up there like that. You know, it's down from the Oak Hill Prison, down the hill, you know. Anyway, I used to see turkey vultures sitting there a lot. So I know what they look like. But then I've also seen something that I couldn't figure out or identify that was all black and bigger than a turkey vulture.
Interesting.
You know, and I've seen something just like that recently, and I knew it, well, it was last summer. We were driving back where I live now out here in Watertown, coming through the Cambridge area, kind of, because we've taken a kind of a detour. One of those overpass signs, you know, the like you're driving down the Beltline, 12 and 18, you're going through to Cambridge and you get to the interstate area. You got the great big signs telling you what exits what, the great big green signs that are attached to those bridges. Well, something was up there and it had a wingspan bigger than those signs, you know, and I'm talking about the big middle ones that say and stay in this lane for Cambridge, you know.
What's our biggest birds in Wisconsin? We got cranes, herons, and maybe swans that come through.
Not that big.
Yeah, I mean, it would be something like a sandhill crane or maybe like a great blue heron, probably. So you're looking at like a 6 to 7 foot wingspan.
How big are turkey vultures?
This was at least an eight plus. You know, 8+ foot wingspan, easy.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. I mean, we've had reports like from Madison. Actually, there was one from just off the Beltline, which was weird.
Yeah, this is where I was, it's just on the Beltline. I was on the Beltline, sitting on one of those signs. With the swings. Yeah. It felt like this, you know.
Right.
Like it was sitting up there stretching.
Yeah, no, that's just bizarre. You know, because I talked to a woman probably 2019. I think it was like 2019. It wasn't last year.
I thought it was.
Was it last year?
Maybe.
I'm reasonably certain it was 2019. Maybe it was last year. It's not really relevant. And And she had said that when she was a little kid, she was with her mom. This would have been like early 2000s. And they saw something like that, or her mom saw it anyway, just off of the belt line. So they had taken the exit to, is that exit right? Kind of. No, it wasn't Whitney Way. It's kind of by the Arboretum.
Seminole Highway.
Yeah.
It was Seminole Highway exit.
And they saw this thing like flying overhead, and it was, you know, kind of as you described, and as a lot of witnesses described, frankly, like this big black being. Only they like they saw the glowing red eyes. Well, what's really weird about their sighting is that it didn't stop with that. It actually ended up being like this weird kind of haunting, almost, where her mom said that she was in the basement of their apartment building at one point, and she saw it down there. Like, she turned around and it was there in the basement with her, which is weird, you know, and you can't really explain that. Like, an animal would do that. What's that?
It sounds a little scary. I don't know if I'd want to be, you know, trapped in a basement with a creature like that.
No. Yeah, she didn't want to be trapped in a basement with a creature like that.
Please tell me you're Batman.
Yeah, right.
Fingers crossed. I mean, it was weird. And they experienced all kinds of other, like, weird phenomena that you would associate with a haunted house sort of during this time period, too. So, like, it was all very, very strange, like, certainly above and beyond, like, what you would expect out of just the sighting of a like, some kind of animal, you know? So,
right.
Yeah. Very weird.
You know, I'm believing what I saw. I think, you know, like, I believe some of that stuff too, you know, where, you know, we assume just because we don't see it anymore and we can't find it anymore, something's extinct. Okay. Well, they've assumed that so many times. And as what was his name? Jeff Goldblum said in Jurassic Park, you know, life finds a way. It always does, you know. And who's to say that, you know, what I saw couldn't have been maybe some bird from the past, or, you know, some kind of whatever, you know, because there was like condors and stuff like that that were huge, or, you know, or something that's not native and just got pushed this far and wasn't native to Wisconsin, and now we're starting to see this big ugly thing. You know, I don't believe what I saw was Mothman. I was thinking more lines of like a Thunderbird when I first saw it, you know.
Sure. Well, I think that accounts for some of the certainly some of the Lake Michigan Mothman sightings. So, like, for instance, there's two different basic sighting profiles that we put together for that particular investigation. You know, the first one is basically misidentified birds, and there are a significant number of those. And then the other profile is for the potentially paranormal stuff that couldn't possibly be explained as misidentified birds. And how we managed to get this profile together, right, is thanks to this guy down in the Pilsen neighborhood of Chicago. This was May of 2018. So he's bicycling to work, right? And as he's biking to work, you know, he's wearing his bicycle helmet, and on his helmet is a GoPro, because he liked to wear a GoPro and record his bicycle. And so, like, he's biking to work, and he sees this couple on the street corner, and they're looking at something up in the sky. And so he looks up to see what, you know, what the hell they're looking at. And he saw what he later described to me as either a giant bat or a man in a wingsuit. And since he's wearing and this is like the middle of the day. And so, like, since he's wearing this GoPro, he decided he's going to follow this thing around, get as much footage of it as he can. And he did. And, he, you know, I spoke to him over the phone. He was very, very forthright in terms of describing his experience. I don't think at any point he was lying. I think that he was trying his best to authentically relate his experience. He went so far as to send us the SD card from that GoPro camera. This guy had nothing to hide.
It's risky business.
Right. And so, like, we with his help managed to, because again, it's a GoPro camera, so it sucked. And it was really, really hard to find the footage in there of this thing. But with his help, we were able to find it. We were able to isolate some good stills. We blew those up. And what he had actually seen, according to the evidence in his camera, which I am apt to believe, was a bird. It was a huge bird, but it was a bird. And so what happens a lot of the time is people will see something that they've never seen before. It could be just a bird that's bigger than anything that they've ever seen. And they will describe that in a variety of ways. You know, it's all sort of dependent on people's perspective and how they interpret it. But in the Lake Michigan Mothman investigation, you see a lot of these daytime sightings that sound, if you kind of strip away the witness narrative, they sound exactly like what this guy in Pilsen saw, which was definitely a bird.
Right.
And so with like using that evidence, you know, we were able to sort of create this profile of daytime sightings in the Lake Michigan Mothman investigation that are almost certainly misidentified birds. Now, that isn't to say that they are all misidentified birds, but some of them almost definitely are. And really, what that allowed us to do, because up until then, I was kind of struggling. I was like, why do some people see this thing during the day and some people see it at night? Why do some people like describe this feeling of stark terror and glowing red eyes, and other people just see a thing kind of winging around, you know, on their noon lunch break, right? And so once we had that Pilsen footage, I think we were really able to kind of create this profile to be like, hey, these daytime sightings that seem totally separate from these other, like other sightings, are totally separate from these other sightings because they're probably just birds. And when you dig a little deeper into that, you can see that, you know, due to things like climate change and the destruction of their wetland habitat, big birds like herons have been roosting in Chicago a lot more than they used to. They've been coming north earlier and staying longer, sometimes even overwintering. You know, mm-hmm. like I found like all kinds of like large ambulatory bird tracks in the snow, which is weird, you know, but if there's open water, they'll stay now. Anyway, all of that aside is really just to say that, definitely. Some people are seeing birds. Some of them are great blue herons. They're huge. They kind of look like a person or a pterodactyl or something if you see them flying. Some of them are something weirder. Maybe something like some of them are something like, you know, what people would describe as a thunderbird, like some kind of unexplained avian species. Some of them are definitely birds.
Like I said, I'm pretty sure what I saw was some kind of bird, but I don't think it was native to Wisconsin to begin with, or it was like maybe some long extinct type thing, because this thing was huge. I mean, massively huge, but it was all bird. Easily, you know.
Sure.
But that's like the Beast of Bray Road. You can take that same theory to Beast of Bray Road. You know, if you've ever been down Bray Road, and there's many of these in Wisconsin, like Gray Road. It's long, dark, no street lights. You know, if you got a nice clear sky and a full moon, you get a little bit of light to go along with your headlights, right? Mm-hmm. You're driving down this road late at night, and you see a wolf or a coyote or something eating a deer, a roadkill. Here's you coming, and it kind of does that, you know, kind of stretch up and look like this, you know, kind of do that thing that wolves do to look at you. Your mind's going to play tricks at you if you're down there at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night by yourself driving down that long road, you know. And then you're going to miss it by a wolf as a Beast of Bray Road.
You know? I mean, you just described every road by us. So, yeah, right. I mean, I totally get it, you know, like. And you're not wrong. I mean, if it's a real quick sighting, you know, like not everybody stops the car or anything to get out and check on it.
That wouldn't be my instinct.
Right. I mean, you're absolutely right. People can misidentify stuff. Like that is a known phenomenon.
I'm not closed-minded enough to say that, well, it could be even a dire wolf, you know, which supposedly went extinct a long time ago. But then there is recent YouTube footage of pretty good YouTube footage that I've seen of what they believed was a dire wolf in this.
I remember that
video.
Yeah. So was that the one chasing the dog around?
Yeah,
the dog. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that big black dire wolf. Yeah,
thing huge,
that was crazy,
massive. All right, now I own. You haven't been to my place yet, Tom, but I own a purebred Siberian Husky. All right. It's the second one I've had. The first one, he unfortunately passed away about 2 years after I moved out here, but he was a little on the old side. But everybody thought he was a wolf right away. They thought that I had a wolf for a pet because he looked so massive. All right. And I'm thinking, you know, you take my dog and you almost double it. That's a wolf. Mm. Okay. You know, a Siberian Husky gets to be about 70, 75 pounds, 80 if it's a male. Okay. Wolves, you're talking 150, 200 plus pounds in some cases.
Oh, yeah.
It's about twice the size of my dog. You know, so, and I can easily see how the mind would play tricks of you, Anya, if you saw my dog or a wolf or something eating roadkill, you know, and you just drove by quick, you know, midnight, you're by yourself and it's all dark, you know, mine's going to play tricks with you real quick. But sure, that's not to say that there's not something going on out there. Because after I met Lee Hample and I went out to his farm and all of that, we got a lot more than what we bargained for.
Oh, definitely. I mean, the other thing I wanted to add on to that, too, is we don't get enough wolves down here where people are really used to seeing them anyway. So
they're mostly up north, middle of the state.
I mean, like, and you know, and I'm sure you guys know that. I'm just saying, like, most people, if they saw a wolf, you know, walking around down here, they would have never seen one out, like, outside of a zoo before, even though they do range down here. It's just not common enough. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think that just increases the probability of somebody misidentifying it, you know, and sort of like exaggerating it in their mind because they're seeing this thing that they've never seen before. And it's going to look weird and scary. It's going to look freaky because they're enormous.
And then just because wolves, all right, here in Wisconsin, they're either called one of two things. They're either called a timber wolf or a gray wolf. It's basically the same wolf. It just depends on where you are in the world, what you call it. Okay. Now, they can be any color, just like a normal canine. You know, I mean, you see one of those that's like pure black. Yeah. You know.
Oh, it's going to be freaky.
You know, and I don't see them around here, but we do have a family of coyotes that moved in around my community within the last year or so.
There's a lot of coyotes down here.
Around this way, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah, there are
careful letting my dog out at night because she'll attack the coyotes.
Yeah, that's not safe.
You know, Siberian Huskies were bred to not so much as people commonly think of them as a sled dog. Hmm. You know, the Siberian Husky in a sled dog is your lead dog because they're the smartest of all the breeds. Okay, it's the Malamutes that make up most of a sled team because they're the strength. They got the most strength. But both breeds can run forever. They've got unbelievable stamina.
Right.
But the Siberian Huskies were bred to basically protect cattle and other things from coyote. You know, because they would, it's like their natural enemy or something. They will kill a coyote or a wolf if it gets close to their property.
Yeah. Well, it's just real dangerous, you know, because a pack of, I would hate to see a dog, you know, against a pack of coyotes, regardless of the dog. Well,
coyotes aren't pack dogs.
But what?
Wolves are, though. Wolves and huskies are pack dogs.
No, you're right. They
go out on their own more. Coyotes are more like scavengers. They'll go
It's more like a fox, too, right?
Yeah. Huh? It's more like a fox. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the coyotes are like the scavenger type. They won't hunt unless they absolutely have to. You know, Sure. And, you know, a wolf will hunt. And the scary thing about the wolves are, is that they're just as smart as my husky out here. And the thing is, you run into one wolf, you better be careful because you're surrounded already.
Right.
You just don't know it yet. You know, they've got you surrounded. That's what a pack dog will do. They'll have one come out, scout you out, check you out while the other's got you surrounded. You make the wrong move, you're up against the pack. You're done. You know.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, you're right about coyotes. Now, I'm not a biologist. I don't know a ton about it.
I just know a lot about it.
Yeah, no, they are scavengers and stuff. I always thought that they had, like, family groups and stuff, but I guess I didn't really – I never really stopped to think about it.
They don't always travel as close-knit as a wolf pack would.
Sure, you know? Okay.
They don't – they're not like like I said, you know, a wolf, you run into one lonely wolf in the woods or something like that. It's not alone. You're surrounded. You
right,
know,
right.
It's not going to be that way with coyotes. They don't have that type of, I don't know. They don't do that kind of, you know.
They're not organized in that way.
Yeah, they're not as organized. Sure. That's it. That's a good way to put it. They're not as organized as like a wolf pack would be. You know, the coyotes.
That's totally fair. Yeah, absolutely. And but there are a ton of coyotes down here. I mean, we hear them.
Yeah, they're all over the place.
Every time we go out, yeah, it's like you hear them howling. You know,
I used to go to my dad. My dad lived in McFarland, and I used to watch his place when he'd leave town for whatever purpose. And I'd drive cab, so I'd get off at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and I'd be driving, you know, out to his place out in the middle of the country part of McFarland, and I'd see them all over the place. Hell, I saw a couple of them in the driveway as I pulled in, and it's like, motherfuckers, move.
Right. You know,
so I can open the garage and get in safely, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, coyote's probably not going to mess with a full-grown human, but
a car coming, they took off like a bat out of hell.
Yeah. I would just worry about our pets, you know, like our smallest dog, she's only like 30 pounds probably, you know, and like, I would hate to see that fight. You know, just because I don't want my dog to get hurt. But yeah, I mean, if you're not a small dog.
I saw a dog that size, you know, like a little lap dog size, you know, 10, 20 pounds. I don't know.
Just a
nice thing, you know. I saw one of those ones. I was up at what was that called? Pelican Lake here in Wisconsin.
Sounds familiar.
It does sound familiar.
All right. It's up past Westfield a little ways. I went up there one time, and it was like early in the morning. I'm sitting there eating breakfast, and the guy decides to let his dog out. And his wife starts yelling at him, "Don't be doing that. You know what happened last time you let the dog out without a leash, right?" So he goes out there, and he's got the dog on the leash, and he's out at the end of the pier on Pelican Lake. Right and early in the morning, sun's just coming up. All of a sudden, an eagle come down and tried to grab the dog from him.
Oh, yeah. No, that'll totally happen.
I've never seen anything like that before, and it was just and then the next thing you know, when he grabs the dog and, you know, gets it back in the house safely, the next thing you know, one hell of a spectacle starts to happen. These eagles just, and it was a whole bunch of them, they were just, boom, swooping down into that lake and coming up and out with fish in their talons.
You know?
And he says, it happens every morning.
That doesn't surprise me. You know, one of the things I noticed when we moved out here is, you know, living in Madison, there's so many rabbits. There's just rabbits everywhere. And then we moved out here, and I've seen like two rabbits in the 6 months we lived here. And I used to see like five or six rabbits every single day. What I do see a lot of, though, I see a bunch of hawks, a bunch of real big hawks.
You don't see a whole lot of rabbits.
I'm like, well, that explains why I'm not seeing so many rabbits. Okay, that makes sense.
Well, yeah, I've seen. I noticed that too. I got out here. I live out in Watertown, out in the country part of it, and yeah, we got a few hawks around here. And I haven't seen very many rabbits, and I haven't seen in the 6 years I've lived here in this community. And there's kind of a big lake in my backyard, kind of. On the other side of the street here, I haven't seen one squirrel. Not one.
Right? I never see squirrels. I'm pretty sure they're all hawk food. Seriously. Like, it's so weird.
Well, hawks are owls. We've got those
out here. Yeah, or owls, for sure.
So, yeah. Those birds of prey, they're quick, and they're precise.
Oh, yeah. I definitely hear owls. I don't see owls as often as I see hawks, but, you know.
You don't see the owls as often as you hear them. I hear them both. There's like two of them here native to Wisconsin, or more than two, but two that I know of that are native to Wisconsin. One will sit there and be vocal at night, and the other one's vocal early in the morning. You know. Hmm. But I don't hear them anymore.
Well, it's important to know stuff like that. You know, honestly, for anybody out there listening, like, if you're wondering why we're all so interested in like animals and animal behavior, is because when you're out in the field, you got to know that stuff. You got to be able to
recognize that stuff. It's one, it's for safety, for your own safety. If you're out in the woods somewhere, you got to know what you could possibly run into and how to protect yourself. And second, it helps with, you know, the misidentifications.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah.
The closer you get to nature, the better an investigator you're going to be. Because, like, I mean, just even I think, you know, before I really got into it, this with Tobias, you know, I probably just considered like Bigfoot and any cryptid as an undiscovered organism. And the more I've gotten closer to nature and been out in nature, the more I'm like, well, that makes no sense, you know, because the more you understand the natural world, the weirder stuff makes more sense.
Yeah.
Well, I think it can be difficult to sort of try to fit Bigfoot or especially stuff like Dogman or Mothman or something like that sort of into the natural order.
Mm-hmm.
Bigfoot, that's the one. A lot of people, you know, like they are really set, and I get this as Bigfoot as in undiscovered primate. I wouldn't write that off.
They think it's a descendant of that. What was it called? It was like a prehistoric
Gigantopithecus.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, that one. Okay, yeah. Sure. I heard that. And yeah, I mean, people.
I've heard that theory.
Yeah.
But I don't buy that either.
Yeah. I mean, like, there are a lot of adherents to that. And some of our friends, you know, I know just from talking to them, like Seth, Seth Breedlove from Small Town Monsters. You know, like, he's getting more on board with high strangeness, I think, although I won't speak for him. But when it comes to Bigfoot, you know, he's always been a staunch naturalist. That is to say, viewing Bigfoot as an undiscovered species, you know. And I get why. I mean, I think that's one where in the right area, you know, with the right food sources and stuff, and the right level of intelligence, you know, it has to be sapient for any of this to make sense. Then, yeah, okay, sure, maybe, you know, because it could at least exist, because we know things like it have existed, like, on the planet at other times. But you get into the other stuff, and, yeah, the more you learn about the natural world, the less sense any of it makes, and which is why, you know, I tend to lean towards the weirder explanations, just because, you know, what was it, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle that said, you know, once you've, discarded all of the like impossible, whatever's left, you know.
That was Spock.
The solution. Was it Spock? I don't know. It was
somebody. Spock.
I butchered the quote anyway. I don't even know.
That's okay. But you know what? Maybe the natural world that we're used to or comfortable with is not what we think it is. And this stuff does make sense somewhere.
Yeah, well, I think it has to make sense somewhere. And that's a really good point. Because I don't think that there are things that can't be understood scientifically. I just happen to think that it's likely that our understanding, our scientific understanding of the world or the universe isn't up to the task of understanding these things yet. I don't know that we have the technology to properly record them. I don't know that we have the models even to even begin to understand or explain their existence. And so we are sort of left in this speculative phase. But yeah, I think eventually, given time, it's something that could be understood in scientific terms, because science is, you know, it's just a way of looking at the world, right? It's not, there shouldn't be any dogma attached. So
I personally think too that, like, if we're talking about undiscovered organisms, like, I could see like lake monsters and like anything in a body of water being very difficult to find, simply because I forgot who said it, but somebody said that we know more about like the surface of the moon than our own oceans.
Right.
So I think if something were to exist in Hyde, it would be underwater.
Yeah, no, I can see that. A lot of people see UFOs coming in and out of water, which has always been interesting to me.
Well, I can see it, you know, considering the sightings all over, the shipwrecks and the unexplained just water phenomenons that's happened, that's been recorded, you know, you can't say that I don't think we even have the technology to discover anything that's deep enough down there yet. You know, who knows how many caverns or caves there could be and where they could lead to and what could be behind there. I still believe that Megalodon could still exist, you know. I mean, who's to say that it doesn't go down to the depths where we can't reach? We don't have that kind of technology. You know, things sure. Wouldn't hold that far down. You know, cameras, you know, probably aren't good enough to get, you know, it gets so dark down there. You know, you've seen the documentaries. It gets so dark down there that the life forms have to create their own light.
Well, yeah, not to mention just like the amount of pressure that, you know, you get at depths like that.
Yeah, it would implode those cameras.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I would buy that for sure. And then, you know, also, you know, when you're sort of thinking about some of the weirder behaviors that people report from different, you know, cryptids, you know, be it Mothman or Dogman or whatever, you know, sort of the like sudden disappearances, some of the like associated weird phenomena, like sort of the haunting type phenomena, UFOs in the same area as these other monster sightings. You know, it does all seem connected in some way, and it does sort of speak to me, as some just something that exists outside of our current understanding of the universe. You know, for instance, like let's say that we do have something coming here from a parallel universe or something, using some means that is completely outside of our understanding. You know, hopping through portals or something. We don't have anything to measure that. We can't predict it. We can't reproduce it in a lab. How would you even begin to study it? You know, it would be like the anthill on our sidewalk outside trying to study us. You know, they would have about as good of a chance. So what do you do in that situation? You know, you do the only thing you can do, which is what we're doing. And hopefully, you know, I think that we're seeing some of the greatest minds on our planet starting to take this stuff seriously and coming up with theoretical models and physics and things that might be able to get us closer, you know, certainly, and then hopefully eventually there to really, you know, being able to understand some of this stuff.
Right. Well, anything's possible.
Totally.
Like you're saying, anything's possible. And, you know, maybe we're just not ready yet for it. And that's why we haven't gotten to that point to see a lot of it yet, you know. You get more sightings. I mean, people have cut down the Bigfoot footage from, what was it, 1967 or something, that Patterson footage. Yeah. They have dissected that till, I don't know how much more you can dissect that, but my opinion, I don't think it's a hoax. I don't think it was faked. I don't think they even had the technology back in that time to do that on a reasonable budget. I mean, look at the movies. Hollywood, Planet of the Apes, 1960-something, the Planet of the Apes movies, you could tell those were costumes.
Yep.
Sure.
Now, I've observed that Patterson footage, I don't know how many times. I'm willing to guess hundreds, maybe thousands I've examined it. You definitely see muscle footage, you know, movement, muscle movement. Pretty damn good costume. We can't even
make it. It would be hard to reproduce today.
Right.
Yeah.
It's still hard to produce today, reproduce that.
They've tried on like Pangea and stuff and they can't do it.
Right. Yeah, well, because like the proportions are too different from a human being. You know, like the arms are too long, you know, like right. You can't fake stuff like that. You couldn't fake stuff like that at that time, like at least not that realistically. So, yeah, I mean, that's one for me that it remains unexplained as far as and I'm concerned. It seems legitimate. I don't know.
And then you take when that was shown for the first time and stuff in 1960, there was no computers. There was no Photoshop. There was no, you know, readily available to everybody. You could, I mean, that was on actual film that had to be developed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they recorded it in an old fashioned, you know, whatever, and it ended up on reel to reel.
Oh yeah, you know,
that was old.
It was shot on like 8mm or something.
Old film, 8mm type film that had to be developed.
Yeah, absolutely. So and no, yeah, I don't think there's much room for tampering with that film. For sure,
I don't think it was tampered with in any way. You know, I still believe that's the most realistic footage out there. You know.
No, I mean, nothing's even close. Yeah, no. I would agree with that.
Yeah,
absolutely agree.
Yeah. Oh, it looks like we're getting almost to a 2-hour mark. I guess we're gonna have to call it.
Well, we're having a good time.
And it was nice to meet you, Emily.
Nice to meet you too.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Come back anytime. You're welcome. And it was
absolutely
great. And you can find all of Tobias's adventures right there on that website, right?
Absolutely. That's the best place to find whatever we're up to.
Whatever you're up to next. And what are you going to be up to next?
That's a good question. I mean, as far as the immediate future, you know, just continuation of the Lake Michigan Mothman investigation that we talked about. And then, you know, we've got a documentary that we were in with Small Town, produced by Small Town Monsters, called On the Trail of the Lake Michigan Mothman. That'll be coming up, I think, by the end of this year.
I think it's early December.
Yeah, I mean, we'll definitely let people know. But yeah, that was exciting because Small Town Monsters is a great production company, and it was nice to work with them again because they're all fantastic. And then, you know, I'm always bouncing around book ideas. So we'll see what I end up going with. But I think we want to put out a special edition of the Lake Michigan Mothman, High Strangeness in the Midwest. And the reason for that is that the investigation has sort of progressed enough where I think we need to update like the book that's out now. But it's not enough where like I would just write a whole new book about it. So maybe go back and revise this one, add a couple of new chapters, you know, put it in like a nice hardcover or something that'll look great on a bookshelf.
Different look to it.
Yeah.
Let me know if you want my story. I'll get my friend to tell it with me for you.
That would, honestly, regardless, I definitely want that because it would, you know, it would be an excellent article. And the real benefit of those articles is that it usually leads to other people coming forward with, you know, with their stories too. So absolutely. You can reach out to us, you know, obviously you hopefully know how to get a hold of us, but you know, you can get a hold of us through the website too. So, you know, all of the contact info on there, but please do. That would be fantastic. Cool.
Don't forget to check out Tom on Off the Rails. What are you guys up to next?
We'll be live tomorrow. We just got done with our Veterans Day. We got a comedy event coming December 11th for the Big Brothers Big Sisters of Ozaukee County. Yeah, it's going to be December 11th. So, and we're still working on Twisted Dreams and Pop Culture Podcast. We're really hooked up
on that Pop Culture Podcast. I got to get on there someday.
Heck yeah. All right. Well, thank you. Nice meeting you guys.
Yeah, it's great to meet you too.
And thank you again for coming on.
Always great to see you, Joe.
And I don't have nothing for Tuesday yet, but Mark will be back Tuesday. So Mark will be back with us next week. So whether that's a good thing or not, who knows? I've had a couple of great co-hosts, even though the one kind of had a power outage on us about halfway through. Poor Chris. Anyway, stay safe and just remember anything's possible, and everybody have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.